preseason finale. Joe, good morning to you. And have you had a chance to guzzle some coffee out there in Tampa Bay already this morning?
It's so funny. I was just telling All Day Dan Day, I just said, hey, man. He goes, you're not bothering me. I said, I've been up since 5 downstairs. There's another batch of people get up real early in the morning. They're called coaches. So, yeah, the coffee, I was jacking coffee, and I call it free coffee because it's I'm freeloading off the Dolphins on the second floor. So I went up and got some of the free coffee, and then I was just sitting down shooting the breeze and talk a little bit, kind of wrapping up preseason. And, you know, this is it for a lot of young guys. For a lot of the older guys, you know, we saw it with 4 games. Now we're seeing it with just 3 games, and that is – big night for a lot of young guys we can talk about, and there are going to be a lot of veteran players that, especially guys that are nicked up or up there in age, that will be in shorts and T-shirts on the sideline tonight.
Yeah, and I want to start with that, Joe. I think probably the most important thing about the third preseason game are those final roster spots that get to be decided, from, you know, second quarterback to which all of the receivers who stick on the roster, last running back on the roster. How do you see some of these hot battles playing out, Joe?
So it's a great question. But matter of fact, you're looking for my notes that Jimmy and I are going to be talking about tonight. It's So the quarterback position is important, the backup quarterback. And if you don't believe that and going, you're rolling your eyes, it's like, yeah, ask all the teams, more than half the teams in the league last year that lost their starting quarterback, or the quarterback wasn't very good and they had to go to the second or third guy, how that all turned out for them. Outside of a little Joe Flacco magic, it wasn't didn't go real well for a lot. So tonight, I think Mike has totally sold Mike McDaniel on Mike White and Skylar Thompson. The question is, you know, who's going to be the two? People are a lot of people think that, well, Skylar is the guy because he's been the first guy up here in these preseason games, and Mike's been coming in behind him, and others are going, well, they just want to see what Skylar can do with better people, and is he getting the most out of the guys he's playing with? Because Mike has been in a situation where throwing him in at the end of games, and last game he had a wide receiver playing running back, and it's like, just get us through this game. So it's a lot more difficult. It just is. If you're playing in the fourth quarter, it's not a shot at anybody, but it can be a lot more difficult to have success. So I'm really curious to see what Mike McDaniel ends up happening. I'm guessing he's got a pretty good idea right now on what he wants to do at that position. The interesting one, and a lot of this is because of injury, what I thought was going to be a real strong position is that wide receiver position. You're good for 2,700 to 3,000 yards with Waddle and Tyreek on the outside. Everybody knows that because those are the numbers they put up, man. They put up big yards. There's a lot of big plays. And I expect more of that. But the problem, once again, who's going to be the third receiver? Odell Beckham still not on the field. Craycraft, who is having a great camp and just moving up the ladder. He's been a starter for the last couple of weeks, and he's looked great. He's out now for it's going to be an extended period of time. So now you're going, okay, I'm just looking at the depth chart. All right, Braxton Berrios and Malik Washington, you guys are next up. For the probably have to start tonight, but will be the 3 or 4 receivers, and let's see what happens there. So those guys get first crack at this, and besides being return guys, the 2 return guys, and then the other one that's really interesting, and I'm just rambling through this, is a rookie free agent class. They are loaded at cornerbacks. They love Storm Duck, Isaiah Johnson, and Jason Maitre. All real nice stories. I just feel like one of them's going to make this 53-man roster. A lot of people disagree with me. I've been wrong a lot. But, boy, those 3 guys, coaches talk about you a lot. If they're talking about you a lot, there's usually something good could happen. And listen, fallback will be those guys on a practice squad unless they get picked up by somebody.
So, Joe, who is tonight going to be fighting for possibly a starting position and playing tonight? Is there anybody that really could make the big jump to being a starter by playing well tonight?
You know, it's a great question, and I give you one on the offensive line. He's played really, really well, and he's still kind of a backup, even though they've got some guys banged up or up there in age. I mean, they don't want to play Teron Armstead. They really don't. They're fine with Teron. Teron's been one of the few guys I've ever seen that doesn't have to practice that can be really good in games. I've never seen anything like it. I've been saying that. Most guys need to practice a little bit, and Teron is one of those guys that is just so fundamentally sound. He's got natural things as far as without boring people to death, his base. He's got a wide base, phenomenal strike in his hands, and everybody just raves about, damn, man, we got to work to get to that point. This guy does all those things naturally. But Jack Driscoll is the guy. Jack Driscoll is a guy like came in here from Philadelphia. I didn't know how good he was. You know, he kind of been a backup, little tackle work. And when he got to play, he's been really good at guard. He's been really, really good at guard. I'm curious. This thing's about playing the best five guys. I wonder if he's not one of those guys that gets a starting job. I'm really curious to see how he plays. I think he'll play again tonight. But that would be the one guy. And then the Eichenberg, you know, Liam Eichenberg's kind of waiting on Aaron to come back and see if, you know, if he's going to be one of the guys or how long he's going to be out. So this thing is this thing's really interesting as far as all these players go. And then the draft class, guys. The draft class,
yeah.
I don't think any of them are starters right away. Chop might be, but I think he's just going to be in the rotation. But it's been a really good draft class. Those guys, when you go out there and you see your draft class guys playing against other draft class guys and a lot of young guys, you're going, wow, it's been a really good draft class. And I think a lot of them are going to play. I think Chop's going to play a lot. Patrick Paul has been the biggest surprise of everybody because everybody said he's a talented guy, but he's a project, needs a lot of work. And he does. But he's been kicking some ass, too. Boy, he's a big, strong guy. And then I think Jalen Wright's going to get a lot of carries. I think Jalen Wright is I never thought I'd say the two deepest positions on this team right now, in my opinion, the deepest positions, maybe three, safety I think is really good when everybody's back, is a running back and tight end room. I think they're loaded. I've never seen a running back. You got Mostert, Achan. You got Jeff Wilson, who's a San Francisco 49er with Mike and knows him. And then you got Jalen Wright, who you moved up in the draft to grab. Big, strong cat. They want to get him a lot of snaps, too. Can't wait. I hope he's healthy enough to play tonight.
Joe, by the way, we're talking with Joe Rose here on AM 560 Sports WQAM ahead of the Dolphins-Buccaneers preseason finale tonight at 7:30. A big topic off the field this week, Joe, has been Tua versus Brian Flores, because Tua made some comments in a very candid interview with Dan Le Batard this week about how, you know, he kept hearing these terrible things from a terrible person referring to Flores and kind of the difference in the Mike McDaniel versus Flores approach. You know, Flores has responded to those. It became a big story this week, Joe. It definitely shows me how comfortable Tua is now in Miami. But were you surprised that he aired that stuff publicly?
Well, it's no secret to anybody in the NFL that Brian Flores was not a fan of Tua Tagovailoa. And I think we have found out in the last year that Tua's not a big fan and doesn't mention Brian Flores' name ever, weren't big of each other. One wasn't big on how good the quarterback was, and the other just didn't like the head coach and the way he was treated. And then he got into more details with Dan Le Batard, and so I got there's a lot of thoughts, and you know the phones have blown up for 2 days with the soap opera stuff and everything. Too obviously, it still bothers him. It's been a couple years. He's had great success. My thing to Tua would be, listen, man, you're going to have coaches you don't like and people that treat you wrong. It happens at some point. And if it was meant to be motivation, it didn't work because that stuff doesn't work on Tua. He needs positive reinforcement, not a guy screaming at him when he does something wrong and the way you talk to somebody. I don't know about you, but Tua wins every day. It's a great comeback. It's one of the greatest comeback stories in the history of this franchise, from where he started to where he is right now, and he got paid. He got one of those big-time contracts that changes your life, changes the life of your kids, your mother and father, your wife, your lifestyle. It changes everything, and you are the man. You're the starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. I'm moving on, man. If I'm two, I hope it's over. And he goes, I'm moving on. Done talking about it. I got to get my guys ready to go. And I got to lead this offense. I got to work on some things, from improve on some things. And I'm excited where I am. He's in a great offense. He's got a lot of weapons. He's got a coach that loves him and loves him up, and knows everything about Tua to give him an opportunity to have bigger numbers this year than last year. Could be a lot bigger.
Well, moving on to the guys Tua's relying on, you said already, Joe, you think the two deepest spots, at least on the offense, are the running backs and the tight ends. Let's talk about the wide receivers. We know Jalen Waddle, he's kind of been limited. We know Tyreek Hill, probably not going to see him. He should be fine. But, of course, OBJ, we haven't heard much. Are you a little bit worried about River Craycraft also? Are you a little bit worried about the wide receivers, or is this just one of those things that's preseason?
I'll tell you the thing that I'm most disappointed with, because I just don't understand, is Odell Beckham injured when he got here. I go, okay, he might have had a little minor procedure done, right? Knee, little scope, something, kept him out. I don't know what it is. So I go, okay, but he'll be ready to go when camp starts, because from that time, you know, you're going back around the draft or after the draft. And now you get into camp and you go, okay, he'll be here later in camp, and camp's over. And all we're seeing is Odell standing next to Tyreek Hill. So I don't know if all of a sudden he's going to start running full speed against defensive backs next week. I don't know. I know what everybody thinks in the media. They think he's going to be out and miss the start of the season. They're going to wait. Again, they're going, hey, if we can get the best of Odell for the last two-thirds of the season or last three quarters, we'll do it. That's not what I thought. When we signed Odell Beckham, I thought, okay, I know he doesn't run. I checked, did my homework. So he doesn't run like he used to. Probably can't play every down, so he doesn't break down. But he's a perfect fit. The guys in Baltimore told me, Joe, I think he's a perfect fit for the Dolphins inside, running routes. He's a great route runner. He's smart. He's got good hands that he can move the chains. Not 16, 17 yards per catch, but you give him option routes in the middle. You let him run some corner routes where everybody's going to be focused on the two guys on the outside, that he can still have an impact with the Dolphins. 35, 40 catches. I didn't think he'd come in and be a 70 or 80 catch guy. That's long gone. Recent history has shown that those days are over for him. He's fighting the injury bug, but I thought he was healthy. You know, we really wanted him. We made it clear we wanted him to be the third receiver, and you can't be the third receiver, man, if you can't get on the field. So that remains to be seen, but Eric Ezekama has jumped up in a big way. I left him out before because he limped a little bit at the end of practice. I don't know. But I know they really, really like him. He's the biggest of all the guys from the 2022 draft class. He's fought the injury bug himself a lot. But don't be surprised, man, if he doesn't slide up. I hope he can play tonight. Again, usually I see a guy limping at practice 2 days ago. I don't know if he's going to play or not. But, yeah, there's some guys. There's some jobs open at wide receiver getting back, but boy, that position I felt really, really good about. And all of a sudden, you still feel good about one and two. They're as good as anybody. But I also know they can break down. Tyreek's now 30 years old. Waddle's been out for a while, whatever it is. This hasn't been a one-week deal. He's been out for a while. They're downplaying that he's fine. I hope so. But we got to get some other guys, and I think a lot of it's going to come from the position that we didn't get into, and that's the tight end position. I think we're going to see the tight end numbers spike up in a big, big way this year. Durham Smythe kind of came on late at the end of the year. He finally got some catches, but it's about as empty of production room as I can remember at tight end in the league, not just the Dolphins, just no touchdowns. And Mike's gone out and got some guys who are really good. It's a loaded position right now. They got a lot of good players.
Yeah, no doubt about that. We appreciate the insight here from Joe Rose. A lot of information as we head into that third and final preseason game tonight. Joe, thank you so much. Go get some more of that free coffee for me.
You know what? I love coffee, and I don't mind buying coffee, but the best coffee is free coffee, especially yes. Finding out the Dolphins are drinking the good stuff, man. So it's good. You guys have a good one, man. Thank you.
David, Joe is very much with us in spirit and in reality. He just joined us, in fact, live. And now we're going to hear from Joe and Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
It is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline Shop. Hundreds of Toyotas indoors and one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan.
All right, Woody, thank you so much as we bring in Mike Florio. Nice enough to join us here on a Thursday. Mike, good morning. How you doing?
Good, Joe. Good to be with you. Glad that we could fit it in this week since we couldn't do it tomorrow. So happy to do it.
I appreciate it. I got to tell you, by the way, the Pat McAfee stuff, I laughed my ass off yesterday. He throws out – how many bombs can he throw out before ESPN? I just like he's taunting ESPN because he's the only guy that does it. It must be in his contract. And you even started to chuckle a little bit with some of the stuff.
They put it on the graphic. I mean, on our show, which streams on Peacock and it's on SiriusXM 85, so we're not subject to the FCC restrictions – we'll drop an F-bomb from time to time. Every once in a while, I get Chris Sims sufficiently riled up that an F-bomb comes out. But we've never put it on the graphic. They put up a graphic, and there it was. It was amazing. So, it just shows you that they perceive the value that his reach has, that his brand has, that They're willing to let him do things that no one else has ever gotten away with on ESPN.
Yep, no question. Well, I guess you know what's been going on down here.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. The little soap opera with a quarterback and Brian Flores after going on a podcast with Lebatard and all of a sudden everybody's got a little different take, and I heard you and by the way, I thought Chris is really interesting because Chris's dad's one of the first guys I thought of with Bill Parcells, who wasn't always great with his dad Phil Sims, and everybody's take on it yesterday.
Well, look, the key is. And it changes from player to player. What does it take to get the most out of this guy? How do I coach this guy into the best version of himself? Where do I push his buttons? And a good coach has to figure out for each player, what will it take? And it's part of reading personalities, understanding interaction. And clearly, Tua is not the kind of guy who is going to thrive.
Correct.
When he's constantly beaten down verbally and mentally, and a lot of us are like that. I don't thrive in that setting. And especially with quarterbacks, you know, there's a connective tissue to what's going on with Daniel Jones in New York right now. They're not projecting confidence in him. If you watch the offseason Hard Knocks, they're trying to trade up and get somebody else. You start to believe the things that you're experiencing. To his point, when he first responded to the question about the differences between Flores and Mike McDaniel, I think that made a lot of sense. I think, you know, he maybe went a little far by calling him a horrible person. But the point is, if you hear all the time that you suck and you shouldn't be here, and we know what was going on 3 years ago. They were trying to trade for Deshaun Watson. Brian Flores was fixated on Deshaun Watson. It almost happened before the season started, and then it hovered over the team and Tua until the trade deadline. And lo and behold, after the trade deadline, Tua started playing better. What a shock. He wasn't in constant fear that he's going to get the phone call or the text message that he's no longer the starting quarterback. They have Deshaun Watson. So I understand that, and I was impressed by the way Flores handled it. I think it was very self-aware. It was very candid. It was very raw. It wasn't cliche. It wasn't coach speak. He's learned from that experience, and he didn't deny anything that Tua said about their interactions.
You know, I just say this because I saw Don Shula, who was as tough as they come, and how he treated Bob Greasy. I was there for Bob Greasy's last year, who by then was like a coach anyway, and the way he treated Dan Marino, he didn't treat – listen, if he ripped him, he didn't do it in front of the team. I don't know if he caught Dan Marino behind closed doors, but he treat his quarterbacks differently, understanding that, you know, they didn't get blasted in front of the team or the offensive meetings that Coach Shula stayed in. So I agree with that. Even old school back then was careful how you treat and don't want to lose the confidence of your quarterback to that point. All right.
Hey, Joe, let me say this. One of the great alternate universe questions of the last generation, what would Aaron Rodgers have done if he was the quarterback of the New England Patriots from 2005 through today? And Belichick would rip Tom Brady in front of the team. It got the other guys to realize there are no sacred cows, scared the hell out of Randy Moss in his first team meeting. 4 years later, Chad Johnson, same thing. But I don't think Belichick would have done that with Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron Rodgers wouldn't have responded to that.
Right.
And so Belichick would have given him more freedom, and, you know, like they treated Lawrence Taylor when Belichick was in New York. You want to find a way to make your great players do great things. And sometimes it means you got to ride them, and sometimes it means you got to leave them alone.
Yeah, no, totally agree. Totally agree. All right, so Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels starting, and now Bo Nix, who, by the way, I watched that first quarter, and he looked like he was about ready to be on the Pro Bowl team at the end of the year, the way he played without showing a lot of offense or defense. You surprised by that, or were you expecting it, Mike?
Well, I'm not surprised that Sean Payton was able to coach up the guy that he believed, based upon his scouting of all the quarterback prospects, he could coach up. He needs a guy who can run his offense the way he designs it. He didn't have that last year with Russell Wilson. So I think he was committed no matter what. I need a quarterback who can run my offense. Bo Nix fell to him. I think there were some parallels to Patrick Mahomes 7 years ago in that there wasn't like a consensus that Patrick Mahomes was the clear must-have quarterback. Mitch Trubisky went before Patrick Mahomes in 2017. But there was a small handful of guys who knew Mahomes was the real deal, and they kept their mouths shut. And I think the same thing applies here. Small handful of offensive minds who saw something in Bo Nix, 61 games at the college level, knows how to run the offense that he's given, smart, mature, talented, good arm, and Peyton loved him. And Peyton brought him in, and he earned that job. It wasn't given to him. He came in, and he proved he can run Peyton's offense, and he hasn't had that since Drew Brees. And this guy could become Drew Brees 2.0, because it's Peyton with a system that is constantly refined. He'll add plays on the morning of a game. He's always looking for ways to crack the defensive code. And I think he trusts that Bo Nix is a guy who he can tell him. Even if they install the play in a walkthrough at the ballroom at the hotel the morning of the game, Bo Nix will figure it out. He'll run it, and it'll work.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, he really looked good. So, well, 2 weeks of the kickoff, the new kickoff return. What are your thoughts on the numbers? There's obviously, 78% kickoff return. I know it's preseason, so everybody wants to try it. The ball's getting to the 28-yard line. Do you like what we've seen? I think it's going to get a lot better. I'm okay with it. What about you?
Well, Joe, here's what I believe is going to happen. If they don't move the touchback point from the 30 to the 35, you're going to see a lot of coaches who strategically and deliberately kick it out of the end zone. It's 28.3 so far through 2 weeks of the preseason. Just give them the 30. Give them the 30 and take the long return off the table. I'm not pinning my career on some fluke play just so the NFL can say we've revived a dead play and I'm going to lose a game that I would have won, and then at the end of the year, I miss the playoffs by one game and I get fired. No, thank you. Just put the ball on the 30. The average field position is a 28.3 anyway. Just put the ball on the 30 and let's go play defense. And if you do that, you don't have to waste any time in practice doing kickoff coverage. If you got a kicker who can consistently bang it out of the end zone, and pretty much every NFL kicker can at this point, just do that. So the owners are meeting next Tuesday on this private equity rule that they're going to put in place that allows owners to sell up to 10% of their team to these private equity funds and raise some, you know, money, some billions on top of the billions they already have. But on the agenda is a discussion and an update on the kickoff rule. And if the owners decide on their own, the league's not pushing this, but if they decide to make the change, they can. And I hope they do it before the season starts. The worst thing they could do is let the season play out 5 or 6 weeks and then change it, because I don't think they should ever play a season under two sets of rules. You've got, you know, half the year or close to it where the touchback point's the 30 and it's a different dynamic. Then all of a sudden, well, we're going to move it to the 35. we're resurrecting the kickoff in the middle of the season. I don't think that's good for anybody. If they're going to do it, and I think they should, they need to do it before week one.
See, Mike, the only thing is, this is a problem we had before, is they're at the Super Bowl, and everyone, 15 of them are touchbacks, and so it was a waste anyway. So you just don't feel like we're going to get more teams that are trying to figure out something to get better field position and take some chances?
If you're the kickoff team, what do you do? What can you really do? I saw last week the 49ers-Saints game, right before halftime, the 49ers kicker put the ball in the landing zone. It wasn't caught. It rolled into the end zone, and it wasn't returned, and that puts the ball on the 20. And I don't know that the Saints player was even aware. You know, a lot of these little glitches we're not going to know about until we see it play out. But if the ball hits between the goal line and the 20 and goes into the end zone or out of the end zone, the offense gets the ball at the 20, which is a huge advantage if you can pull it off. But are you confident you can do that? And if you're leading in a game in the second half and Tyreek Hill's back there waiting to try to catch the ball and rip off a touchdown return, and now you're back in a close game again. I had said at one point, by the trade deadline, half the league will be deliberately kicking it out of the end zone. And I started talking to people about it, and I've gotten feedback along the lines of, forget trade deadline, there's going to be coaches who say, I'm not your guinea pig. I'm going to let others do this, and then I'll decide whether or not I want to dip a toe in that water. I'm not pinning my career on this brand new play we've never seen before. I want to see how it plays out before I make a final decision. And again, you don't have to practice it. So if you're not practicing it now, when are you going to start practicing it during the season? So that's why I think if they're going to change it, they need to do it now to give everybody a fair chance to adjust. You don't want them to adjust with, 6 days between games to all of a sudden the kickoff is a thing again, because if you kick it out of the end zone, it's going to the 35.
Mike, I know you guys got a lot on your plate, so you probably haven't been watching this real closely. This is a Dolphin thing. So Odell Beckham Jr., they signed him obviously to be the third wide receiver with Waddle and Tyreek Hill on the outside. So he still hasn't practiced. He's still standing around out there, and now people are saying he may not be ready for the start of the season. I don't know. The coach hasn't said that, but so a lot of people going, Joe, stop pushing him as a third wide receiver. It's not going to happen. I still think he'd catch 35 or 40 footballs with those two guys on the outside. What's your thoughts on what Odell Beckham has left in the tank?
Well, he's always done his own thing, and he's always gotten ready to play his own way. And he's dealing with the reality that even though there's still a spot for him in the NFL, he's not the star that he once was. And I think that's difficult for anyone to process in that business when so much of your identity is tied up into what you became earlier in your career. And now you've got one guy making $30 million a year. You got another guy making $28 million a year. And he got a contract this year far less than last year. I think that's part of what he's processing too. I personally think that the Ravens overpaid him last year deliberately to try to help get things done with Lamar Jackson. It was kind of like an olive branch, and we're going to bring this guy in. You want him here. Because they paid him $15 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
Which is, people are like, wait a minute. Who was anybody else even going to pay him 10? So the Dolphins were far below that. There's incentives in there. And, it puts the guy in a mindset where maybe he just decides, until I know I'm 100% ready to go, I'm not doing anything. Because it's not like they're paying me what I'm used to making. So I think there's just a complicated stew of emotions that come into play. We'll see if he's ready week one. But yeah, last year he clearly wasn't the guy that he'd been in the past. And maybe you don't need to be with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, but I wouldn't have high expectations for him this year. So if anything he does, you consider it a bonus.
Yeah. So I just kind of think that I heard Tyreek say this, we just need a guy to kind of help us move the chains and get first downs and win one-on-one and get a little separation and keep drives going for us to make some big plays on the outside. And I go, okay, all right, I can go with that. Hey, before I let you go, you made us aware of it. I just said, no gambling, suspensions. Wow. Maybe everybody got the message, or are you still not? We're going to have some slip-ups here down the road.
I think guys have gotten smarter, right? I think they've learned from the mistakes that others have made. Don't bet in your own name. Don't bet on your own phone. Don't bet at work. Don't bet on football. The easy workaround is Just have a family member do it. It's an, as long as, I'm serious, as long as you can trust that person not to to extort you and then say, I'm going to tell the commissioner what I've been doing, which probably isn't all that far-fetched. All it takes is one broken relationship, and that person who was making the bets for the friend, the cousin, the relative who's playing in the NFL, all of a sudden you got a problem. But I still think that it's happening. Look, guys are – how many years has it been now? 6 years. Guys are coming into the league who already had the ability to gamble. It's so accepted. It's so much part of what we do. I think that they just have – because the guys they've suspended, Joe, are the lowest of the low-hanging fruit, right, doing stupid things. The Calvin Ridley doing a five-team parlay on his phone. And what happens is the relationships they have with DraftKings, FanDuel, they rat on the guys. It's easy to catch. The harder stuff is what I'm concerned about. Inside information, selling it, sharing it, family members finding out things and placing bets or providing information to others based on that, the potential for rigging of games, the Jontay Porter thing where a guy pulls himself out of a game so the unders on his prospects hit. Those are the deeper issues that the NFL, I don't think, has the infrastructure to keep it from happening. All they can hope to do is catch a guy who does it.
Yeah. Good stuff, Mike. We have the Hard Rock app down here, and it's a big no-no for the team, obviously. And it's not that far away from stadium to that beautiful casino and hotel they have. Mike, thank you. Really appreciate you coming on. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Joe. See you, buddy.
Mike Flora from Pro Football Talk joining us this morning. Talk a little bit.
Alex Dono and Dan Day with you for Joe Rose here on this Friday morning. And for Joe and Hollywood. Hollywood's got the day off today as well. So my major request for the upcoming 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. hours is I got to get some day spa, Dan. I don't know why I let you slide in the 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. hour, but in the 8 o'clock hour, you got to step into that day spa, bro.
No, we always step up, man. You just let me know. We got this. Of course, it's you and I all day long. Seriously, keep the radio and the app rolling because we're going to go till, I mean, they say 12:30, but you know me, man. When it gets late at night, I kind of get a little long-winded. So we might be on all night long for the post game. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and before we start that 8 a.m. hour, Dan was just directing me to these videos of 47-year-old Tom Brady dunking a basketball. Now, he's not necessarily above the rim, but he's dunking that basketball. 47-year-old man, and Dan, I was impressed by that, and I don't think anyone will be surprised to hear me say this. I never in my life have I been able to dunk on a regulation 10-foot rim, but you were telling me that you could dunk once upon a time.
Yeah, once upon a time, not in game action like Tom Brady did. Of course, he was wearing jeans, so that was even more impressive.
Yeah, it's even more impressive.
Yes, I could at 18 years old, 17, 18 years old, dunk a basketball, but once again, not in game action because dunking in a game is different than dunking like Tom Brady did just running around because you can get your steps. Right. You don't have to worry about other things. So not in game action. I could soft dunk a basketball at 5'10", by the way. So yeah, I had a little bit
impressive
going. Nowadays. No way would I even try. I don't even play pickup basketball anymore. I don't play competitive sports at all.
Really?
No.
Nothing. You don't play a little pickup soccer, a little pickup hockey? Like I don't know, skateboarding? What are you into?
Yeah, I'm into like me competitively trying to see how happy hour is going to go at the local dive bars that I'm at. Yeah. See, and I felt so bad.
By the way,
good.
But by the way, even though you and I have to this day we've never gone drinking together, which is unfortunate, but something of you has like rubbed off on me, your love for dive bars. Oh. So like every time I'm in the car with my wife and we drive by a dive bar and the worse it looks from the outside, ooh, the more intrigued, mm-hmm, I am. And my wife is like, are you kidding? You're going to get us killed if, yeah, we go to this dive bar. It's like, I don't know what's going on in there. So my wife is like disgusted with my fascination with dive bars, which all started with Dan Day.
Yeah, and it's true. And we were much beloved in dive bars because, you know, I would go into dive bars. People still ask me about, you know, our show and everything that we've done. There was a couple dive bars, even in my neighborhood, On the Rocks and Bob's Your Uncle, that would play our show during the day on their, you know, our jukebox or whatever. So there's a lot of love out there. And, I mean, I definitely love it. And, you know, if you ever need some guidance in that area, I mean, I wouldn't bring your wife, although she's always invited, but, you know, we can definitely make that happen.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.